Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to the Crosscast. It's the middle of the curse period and so much has happened, we thought it's about time that we had a little catch-up. Last time, we described Dendermonde as that surprise present found under the tree that we would unwrap a couple of days after Christmas, and we didn't really quite know what to expect. So today we're going to decide whether Dendermonde was worth the wait or not, and we're going to talk through who was zooming at the Zolder Zigzags. In the last round, we'll be joined by Finn Mansfield, who'll be talking through the rider's view, not only of Zolder, but his experiences of the courses at Bredene, Baal, Gillingham, and the next World Cup at Holst. Or is it? I woke up to snow this morning and it looks absolutely grim outside, so I'm actually quite pleased that I'm tucked up inside talking to Matt on Zoom and next to the fire, which I might have to stoke up at a couple of moments through the recording today. It's great to be joined by you, Matt. Hard to believe it was only 5 days ago we were recording the last show. So we've had Christmas, a couple of high-level races, opportunity to consume a lot of calories. Did you get any treats for your bike under the tree, Matt?
Well, it's been a really weird Christmas. We've done a whole load of Zoom Christmas family meetings, which was a surreal experience with some septuagenarians and octogenarians trying to connect to Zoom with me. And it's been a non-riding Christmas, which I didn't really expect. I thought I'd be out on the bike more instead of just watching lots of great racing on TV. But underneath the tree was a really nice surprise. Some very cheeky souls, Jordan down at Halo Wheels, who are sponsors of the Donny Chain Gang, which I'm also on the mic for, sent up a set of wheels and said, we know you crash a lot and you're not exactly the lightest person, so you'd be the ideal person to test these for us. So here you are, Merry Christmas, keep it rubber side down, and when you finish, send them back and let's see if they're still in one piece. So that's my mission for the year, and my New Year's resolution is actually to ride them and try and stay rubber side down without absolutely damaging myself. What about you, Neil?
Well, in a slightly related area, I must admit I was most pleased with a wheel dishing tool. Our other great distanced Zoom achievement was we managed to play a game of Cluedo over Zoom with in three different locations all at once. It worked remarkably well. It was amazingly good how well it worked. So, yeah, it can be done if you really put your mind to it. And you have, I'd hate to think how many devices we had working all at the same time to make this work. But, yeah, that was great fun. Yeah, so, yeah, we've had a good time. But obviously one of the most, yeah, it's been a really busy time in terms of watching the racing. We saw a really contrasting pair. I don't know what you think, Mark. I thought a real massive contrast between the classic Zolder course with yet another really close finish in the women's race. Because won by Brand, followed by Alvarado with Verst and Betsema in a four-way sprint with that strange scream at the end. I don't know if we've maybe come on to that. And then in the men's race, Matthew van der Poel, it was back to old times, really, wasn't it? It was a bit reminiscent of pre-COVID days where you have Matthew van der Poel winning ahead of Van Aert with Lars van der Haar again in third. He always goes well as old. I'd love to see him there. Did you see it? Notice that scream at the end of the women's race, Matt?
I didn't. Okay. I can't have been listening as close to this.
They are literally mid-sprint. Not mid-sprint, at the peak of the sprint. Just about to go over the line. And you hear it on the coverage. It's easy to hear. And there's what sounds like a scream of and it's not one of the riders. It's clearly come from the side. Whether exactly what the background is, I have no idea. But then three of the riders in the sprint, literally about to go to the line, all look to one side to see what this strange noise is. It's really...
Maybe there's a part of the course or something, on another rider somewhere else having a very close encounter with a post or something.
But it wasn't a blood-curdling scream. It was more of a... You know, someone putting a piece of ice down your neck type of scream.
Well, that's possible at the moment. If anybody comes in the studio, you'll know about it if I get a piece of ice down my neck. Or it comes down underneath because I'm underground in the studio. So it might sort of melt its way in and then refreeze. You never know. It's not the warmest down here today. I thought they were great races. Zolder, classic course. I mean, it could be one of my favourites to watch. It's got a bit of everything. And it is quite high risk. I mean, we've seen a lot more incidents there versus others. And I think that, for me, the there's some brilliant bits and some not so brilliant bits, and the not so brilliant is definitely that first turn, that first corner. But that was pretty much true of both races, and it seems to be that we're starting to go back to this old school, putting a corner that is a full-on hairpin at the end of a 30-mile-an-hour sprint straight. And I'm fairly sure the regulations tell you you shouldn't be doing anything sharper than 90 degrees, but maybe, you know, at the moment, anything is better than nothing, so... But the rest of it's a lovely course.
Yeah, yeah, and that's straight. There's some bits you can't really see it on the coverage. I was there last year, and the straight itself, although it looks dead straight, there's a section. I think it's the exit from the motor racing pits where it actually comes out into the course slightly, and they cover it in padding. And I think what happens early on in that race is that people are squeezed from the left, they move right. And there were two riders that went down last year. One of them went away in an ambulance, someone at the back of the field, where there was a crash just at that little squeeze point. And I think that start, it looks like it should be dead straight forward. It's so wide. But, of course, everyone
it
wants
pushes,
the same
doesn't
piece.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone wants the same piece. And then what is happening is when you build a course... And I'm sure lots of our listeners have been out there with the posts and stakes. What's absolutely critical is you're not thinking about what's going to happen where you are, but also where you are two, three, four turns down. And that is where the flow is. And it is like water. So if you imagine a stream hitting something that diverts it off right, or you put your hand under the tap at an angle, oddly enough, the water all goes off to one side. And that's exactly what happens. Everybody goes bouncing to the right-hand side, but then they're in the wrong position to go around the right-hand turn, and they've got to come across. You've got people diving up the inside, as always. And I think that, for me, it's maybe where they need a little bit of thought. But the rest of it, just classic. The drop down between the trees, the multiple lines, the big drops downs to the barriers. I mean, it was a real good race, and it promoted good racing. It was close. I mean, we saw a sprint finish. I mean, it's a cross race, and we saw a sprint finish. And okay, it was aided by the fact that it was draining well, it was relatively dry, it wasn't a slot fest, but I thought that was great course design and some great racing. And I absolutely love seeing a couple of riders sort of coming back there. Manon Bakker, fifth place for her. You know, if you take the top four as being great riders, Bakker coming through, Alicia Frank returning into form, and Sophie Wright putting in a great ride as well. Sophie with a 23rd place there. It doesn't sound awesome, given that we know that Sophie has been a European champion, but clearly riding herself in well, and great to see her out there so often.
Yeah, I think Sophie's been, as we've said before, she's been travelling around but getting some really good results, as has Laura Greenhow, who was also, she finished a little bit behind in 37th. She's been out racing some of the same races as Sophie recently. Laura clearly been basing herself out on the continent, former rower, two silver medals for
really?
Great Britain.
No way.
So yes, two silver medals for the Great Britain team. Good rides, and really good to see someone out there committed to the series, and it seems like she's having a great time racing some good head-to-heads.
Well, it's good to see somebody taking advantage of what is a situation where lots of people can't go. She's in a position to be able to be there and ride. Fantastic stuff, and that's really, really good. And I think the racing was brilliant in the women's race. The men's, wow. I mean, I'm going to do a correction for you, Neil, because we've got Wout van Aert had a puncture in this race. And it's very much the flip side of Wout van Aert attacking Mathieu van der Poel in Herentals. And you were fairly convinced that the puncture happened after the attack. Now, I've watched this back on the biggest screen we've got, at the slowest speed, pausing it all the way through, and he got the puncture first. It's only a matter of a fraction of a second, but I think as the rim hit the floor, the reaction time follows, and then Wout van Aert attacks. And the reason you say that is it's actually on an uphill, and there's a rooty section, and you see Matthew's back wheel move and shift as it hits the deck, And I think that's the moment of the puncture. And after that, it is clearly deflated and Wout's going off into the lead. So quick correction on that one. Sorry, Neil. I hate to be a pedant, but I've got to take the opportunities when they come because you can usually spot these better than me. But Wout van Aert's got a puncture in Zolder. Would it have made a difference? I think it would. I think it would. I think we'd have seen a much closer race. We might have still seen Matthew van der Poel winning, but I think Wout van Aert would have been right up there, the form he's on. I'm absolutely riding strong. Lawrence Sweek, great ride by Sweek. I mean, he was back to his course of old. He was enjoying it. You could see he was enjoying it. You know, there was a smiley buzz coming off Sweek on the way through. So I think you're totally justified in any kind of bromance going on there, Neil, this time round. Tom Pidcock, ninth, and again taking the race to the riders early on. Not a bad result, but I suppose we can't really go too much further without talking about Isabeau and what was a pretty bad crash. He certainly looked really, really in pain.
Yeah, he did. And as much as that moment, it seems that every spectator, every person on social media becomes an orthopaedic surgeon for a moment and pretty much diagnose every bone in the entire body being smashed to bits, potentially all of them all at once. It looked horrible. He was clearly in pain, got taken away in the ambulance. But as it turns out, no broken bones, but his potential to be back. And I think it's as much as when he went down, to me, it looked like, right, okay, that's the end of the series for him. Actually, he's got such a long time until the next race. He has got time to recover. So potentially now everything else is gone. Whether he'll be back in time for, well, we know he wasn't back in time for the next round of the World Cup. And he said before the race that he was not focusing on the World Cup anymore. So perhaps he's got opportunity to come back, focus on that one last race, and come back and actually take the series after all. I thought that it was totally out.
Yeah, you thought when he hit the deck and he was laying there and he's clearly in pain and he's not going anywhere, you think, oh, this is it, it's all over. It turns out it's a dislocation. That's the latest news we've got when we're recording the show. He's actually dislocated his elbow, which is painful. Just, I mean, it makes me wince just thinking about it. But in terms of recovery, so long as there's not so too much soft tissue damage, then he's going to be able to come back, I think, in time for the next one. And remember, it's cross. Anything can happen, and we don't want to wish an incident on somebody else. But if somebody blows a tub at the wrong place, you know, that series is still wide open. And it's all to race for. He could still get himself up there and could still potentially win the series. So I think he was, I mean, I don't know whether it was unlucky, whether he slid out there. We saw a few people have a few slides, and there's a great shot of Matthew van der Poel correcting a two-wheel slide on his way round there. Yeah, same point. So was he just unlucky? I mean, I'm sure next time we see a race, there'll be a padding down there.
Could we be
that's
back
for sure.
Because it was those barriers with the legs that stick out again on that corner. And I've not seen, you may have seen, I've certainly not seen the whole incident unfold on any of the coverage. We kind of saw it in mid-crash, but it was exactly at one of the points where you've got the barriers with the legs that stick out that have been talked about many times in all forms of cycle sport.
Yeah, the barrier line had clearly moved. Anybody who doesn't know, I spent 10, if not 15 years put barriers into bike races. Those are circa 1980 design, super heavy ones, and they last forever, which is why everybody still uses them every now and then. The barriers have moved out of line. The line shifts pre and post crash. Immediately post crash, it's slightly different. So he has caught them, but they're the most flexible in terms of being able to put them into place quickly and deploy them quickly. And because of that, you're always going to find some with the legs sticking out. Equally, if it's windy, they're the ones that don't blow over. So whilst the modern Olympic style, which only weighs about 9 kilos, is nice and easy to put out and is a little bit safer, or the big angle ones, they're harder to put out, but they weigh so much you need two people and a forklift to do it. They don't go up and down hills, they don't go around bends, they don't go around corners as easy. So I think it is, but I think that's a place for the fantastic inflatable barriers that we've seen, the inflatable pads on the corners that they've got elsewhere on that very same course. So I think next year that's going to be fixed for next year. And I think you shouldn't detract from the course. You know, you think how many passes of that corner so the riders made and how many incidents
that's
there
true,
were.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
you know, it was not major. It's one incident.
But the women's race was, I think it was more of a slow burn. It was a strategic race for the women's one at Zolder, where people kind of all waiting, watching each other in a really good way. Yeah, it was things, people doing like attacks, seeing what happened and then saving themselves again for later. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, it was subtle, and I think as somebody who's really into cross and watching body language and watching slight differences in style and when people are on the edge and they're not, that for me was really, really captivating. And I spent a lot of the time watching that race thinking, who's going to go now? Who's feeling strong? Where is it waxing and waning? You know, where is this going to go? And as even when they're coming onto the sprint, okay, I'm going to take credit for calling the right winner in the sprint, but I don't think that was particularly that hard. But you still wouldn't have necessarily predicted the places behind to be the ones that they were, given that Betsimon was actually looking strong and doing classic bad guy of doing not a lot during the rest of the race.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Interesting race. And for me, the future across is races like that. You know, really interesting, great courses, loads of tech in there, good racing and close finishes.
So the Super Prestige Series overall is still actually, it's not close right the way through the top five, but all the top five got something to race for in the Super Prestige, because we've got Easerbeat and Aerts. As we say, even though Easerbeat didn't get any points this time, he's still only a few points behind Aerts, who's still leading. And then behind them, we've got Vanturen, Sveik and Van der Haar, all within 2 points of each other. So any of those five could end up, I'd say, second. Mathematically, they could end up first, but unlikely, I think. But Tune Aerts certainly has the advantage at the moment. In the women's, then it's the first two. No surprises, it's between Brand and Alvarado. But if you think about how dominant Brand has been, actually, she's only, I think, what, 3 points ahead of Alvarado, and that's because of Alvarado being on much better form at the very start of the season and getting some of those early wins in the series, which, you know, we see everywhere from your domestic leagues right the way through. You know, early points worth just as much as the late points in the series. So all to play for in both of those at the very front. Let's move on to Dendermonde. So let's do the top threes first before we get distracted. Brand won ahead of an absolutely charging Hunsinger and a fading Alvarado. Van Aert was totally dominant, finishing almost 3 minutes ahead of Van der Poel, and Aerts finished in third. Interesting that we had Van der Haar, Pidcock and Meissen all DNF. When that race was going on, actually, Caroline, Mrs. M, she came home at about three-quarter distance after she'd been out on a training ride and said, is this live? I said, yeah, it's back to old times. There's a three-minute gap between Van Aert and Van der Poel. And, of course, it was actually round the other way to normal.
It was definitely a throwback race for all sorts of reasons. It was good to see Van Aert. I mean, his running is consistently good. It's not the fastest, but he's consistent and he's relatively sure-footed, which was a major advantage. And he's a big diesel-y engine. You could see the torque coming through the bike. You know, the stress on that frame and the parts is probably a scale again above pretty much anybody else. He was really putting the power down really smoothly. He was riding through lots of stuff. And his running was really, really smart, I thought, where he ran. Matthew Van der Poel looked like he really didn't want to be there. I think if he was not wearing that World Champs jersey, I think he'd probably have joined Van der Haar, Pidcock and Meissen. And I think if he'd have come outside the top three, he'd have been off as well. If he wasn't going on the podium, he'd have been off. He'd have called it a day because it was horrendous conditions. I mean, both the men's and women's races were just something else again. The standing water, the ground conditions, the temperature, the wind. It was just evil. There's comparisons. I think every local league in the UK went, that's like this course, yeah, or that's like that course. Well, or, and I'm not going to say any of the courses' names that came up in our household because I don't want the organisers. But there was definitely some comparisons.
There were probably the
between
same ones.
Local leagues. Yeah, I bet they were, Neil. I bet they were. I mean, honestly, it was like, you're soon going to see them wearing a duvet jacket when they're racing because that's just like so-and-so. And look how thick the grass is and how lumpy the field is. That's just like so-and-so. And I think UK viewers were all going, yes, we recognise this. This is like what we've always done and regularly still do. And I think that was reflected with seeing Turner and Main in 11th and 12th places.
Yeah.
You know, they were absolutely... I mean, Ben
pause here for a moment. Let's just say that again. Turner and Main, 11th and 12th places. This is an elite World Cup. And we've got... And we kind of have just kind of overlooked it almost. We've got Pidcock dropping out because he's cold. Which is fine, there's no criticism of Pidcock.
I don't, you know what I mean? You have that for a fact there, Neil. He dropped out because he was cold. I think he dropped out because he was having a hard time and he realises it's a long season to go.
But we've got an elite World Cup where we've got not our favourite rider who's clearly, you know, up there, second in Wales last year, but Ben Turner, Tom Amain coming in 11th and 12th. That's a significant step forward. Now, if it wasn't for Pidcock, if we dropped back 5 years to when we were just starting off on the crosscast and I was doing the velocast every week, then that would have been unthinkable to have two British riders so close, and both under 23s as well. Now, I mean, I think let's just celebrate that fact. For whatever the circumstances, this is a major, major thing. You know, you think back to when Ian Field had his, you know, that the amazing ride of the home crowd giving him that extra 10 watts when we had the Milton Keynes race, and his amazing result there. You know, we're talking, you know, it's a similar type of such a really, really strong ride from those. Amazing. Yeah, I think for whatever the circumstances, we can't take that away.
Well, I think when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And I think it showed that they've both got a really good grounding and have got the experience. It's not just a flash in the pan result. It's based on solid training. It's based on solid skills. It's based on committing to being a cross rider. It's based on your location of where you train, your commitment to cross. And Turner and Main, we've seen them grow through being junior riders, working their way right up now into under 23. We've seen them going out and riding World Cups, and they are putting consistent good results in. Their 11th and 12th places are great, but for them, it's not really a surprise. I mean, I was watching it at the end, screaming at them as they came over the line. You don't want to be a neighbour near me anywhere when there's a cross race on, and I'm actually watching it because it's kind of loud. But Turner coming in, I was like, full of it, and then Main nearly getting caught on the line and nearly getting rolled. I was like, no, come on! And for me, it's great to see them growing up, but it's also a reflection of what they've done and how they've committed to it. But it was good to see people like Thetis up there. Thetis come over and ridden the UK crosses, and I mean, you saw his performance, I think, at Crawley, where it was a very similar top field and conditions, which was brutally tough, you know, ankle deep mud, lots of running, being strategic in how you do it, some pretty heavy going in other places. And Thies ninth, big ride though, Pim Romhar, eighth place, and only a youngster. Great ride by him, and you saw that coming over the line. That put a massive smile on my face, the fact you could see he was just like over the moon with his position as he came in. And that's, for me, what cross is all about. We have these changes in positions. We have people moving up and down in where they are. You get different people winning, and you get that different emotion. I mean, the men's was the same as the women's. Yeah, you know, different people moving about.
But Pim Romhar is 19. Femme Van Empel is 18. She finished fourth. Yeah, yeah. So such a, she's such a young talent. Coming in, I mean, that's another quality ride. Particularly in the women's race, I was looking at that thinking, well, does this, I'll be interested in your thoughts on this, Matt. You know, does it help if you're experienced? And who are the most experienced people on the course? And looking at the race there, I thought, well, maybe if you are an experienced rider, you're more likely to be able to pick your lines better. But after seeing Katie Compton have the trouble that she had in that race, you know, she is one of the most experienced riders in the world in the women's field. But I think, well, actually, she's raced year on year on the toughest courses, and actually what are some of the best prepared courses as well. So maybe the experience on the ones that are deteriorating in such a bad way, maybe she's hasn't got as much experience.
Yeah, I think there's a balance here. There's experience generally, so you know how to deal with different scenarios and how you're feeling and how it's racing. But for me, there's a much more dynamic race field within the women's racing, which is getting incredible. And it's been good. We've had some fantastically talented riders. You know, you mentioned Compton, Voss. You know, they are exceptionally talented. But there's not been the strength in depth that we've had there. Now, the women's race field is awesome all the way through it. There's no also-rans in that field. They're all world-class riders who are capable of putting in a podium performance in their local or national level. And they're now racing together in the World Cup. And I think because of that, that experience isn't necessarily as important. And I think the point you made there is correct. If you've raced well groomed courses, nicely mown grass for years, you've been on very quick rolling world class courses, if you haven't ridden a local league race, which this basically looked like, then maybe you haven't got that experience. I think for me it was interesting. I was thinking during the race, is it due to, I mean, Katie, for those people who haven't seen it, it's going to be all over YouTube, and I think Mark put out a like Mrs. Katie Compton put out a tweet there about getting stuck in the mud, and it's a particularly glutinous, deep bog. Think Lorna Doone type bog on top of the moors depth. You know, you could lose a horse in this thing. It's so deep. You know, stuff goes in, you're never going to come out. But it was in the same place. And if you fell in it once or you saw one person go in it, you would avoid this like COVID. You really would. It was horrendous, and she didn't, and riders were going through it. You only need to look at the front two. Brandt and Alvarado in the later stages went through, and that's the pressure on there. I did wonder whether it was because Katie has grown up and has ridden in the States so much that in the States, in mountain biking, mudding is a thing. Here in the UK, that's like 24/7. That's 365 days a year you can find mud in the UK. In the States, it's actually very rare, and people actually don't like doing it most of the time.
I think with Katie,
you know, they're fast courses.
Yeah, I mean, with Katie, we picked her out because she had a camera on her, but we saw other people in the background. It happened to loads and loads of people just there, and I think. Yeah, Katie, the legend that is Katie Compton, absolutely amazing one. She's had such bad luck this year, and yeah, hopefully we'll get some.
But that theory doesn't work, does it? When you've got Hunsinger, who's a stateside rider who's grown up in the modern stateside scene, which is very fast, incredibly quick racing.
But I thought
coming over and riding and absolutely flying.
I thought Hunsinger's had a masterclass in pacing. She didn't aim to take all the places all at once early on, as you see a lot of riders do. It was she just plugged away, and she just had more in the tank when it came to those last couple of laps when everyone else was clearly fading. She didn't seem to be fading in the same way as everybody else. So the number of places she must have taken in the last few laps, you know, she was taking them time and time again. It wasn't a static race for Hunsinger. Another second And I think if she must be rueing that she wasn't at Tabor, because I think if she had been, she'd be very much in contention for a podium overall. I can't see anyone taking it to Brand, but Honsinger is currently fifth place, and I think that she's quite, you know, with those 2 seconds, she can keep this up. She's going to start over taking places above those ahead of her. So the standings are Brand way, way ahead of Alvarado, and then Betsema, Vass and Honsinger, who are kind of within 8 points of each other. But if you bear in mind, you get 40 for a win, and there's a gap of 10 down to second where you get 30. You know, that is that's one position. It can make that difference. In the men's standings, you've got Van Aert, Van Turenhout and Van der Poel, who are all the top three, and more than 10 points between each of them. So fairly stable there. But seeing Van Aert actually take the jersey, I thought that was really significant. Seeing Van Aert in a leader's jersey at the next round, it's been a while since we've seen that.
It is. I think it was a race where we saw maybe a resurgence of the traditional Belgian cross rider. Sanne taking sixth place in the women's race and looking much more like her old self, using her skills to ride really, really well in that race. And then Van Aert, clearly a class apart. He got all the luck, don't get me wrong. He was clearly in the right place, right time. And if you add that to the win at Herentals on home ground, on what was a very techie course, I think you've got a very different picture now, moving on from here towards the next World Cup and into the coming races. And I think it's going to be filled with incident. I mean, I saw I think it's the first time I've seen it for a couple of years, where we had Saline's bars hooked into Brand's wheels as it came down the slope. I mean, when was the last time we saw that? I think that's a good 2 or 3 seasons ago. Last time I saw that happen, we had riders sliding down onto the knees at the bottom of the downhills in the mud. We've had a whole different change. And I think it's going to be interesting, because I know when we move on, we're going to be talking about what the courses are like. But this was old school.
Mm. So if we talk about this old
school...
Not
my idea of cross.
Well, exactly. This is... Should we be riding on courses like this? I think it's two different things here. One of them is, should we be intentionally riding in places where the conditions are like this? Where you have those races, so the local league races that we could name and we're not going to, where you know it's going to be like this, and it's part of the local scene, and you ride cross because you love the sport and you take the hit sometimes. So there's kind of the should we be not worried about it. The other side is, what do you do if you've got a course like this where you put it on? They're desperate to run it, I think you said, Matt, and you saw in between the coverage, they were taking parts of the course out. You saw that amazing flyover that wasn't used because of the weather. So they had to change. If you look at the course, the course plan, I'm not quite sure where they went in the end, actually. But because it did have a crossover, there was possible to divert it in another way. So they did change the course. But I felt that the mud was actually dangerous in the depth of it, and you see how many people were getting their legs stuck, and it was almost like what's called, you know, coming back to our orthopedic surgeons again, a ski boot fracture, where your foot gets stuck, you've got your forward momentum, and the amount of momentum you've got is more than what your bone can take, and so you kind of get broken bones in the leg, but you know, your shin breaks in half. It's a ski boot fracture. And seeing this happen so many times to so many riders, and those who were tripping over, going down, getting their foot stuck, I was waiting afterwards to see what injuries we'd had, and I was relieved that I haven't seen any. I don't know if you know of any, Matt.
I don't think there's been anything particularly caused that you can attribute to one feature. We've got a number of dangerous features on there, and it's how far do you push it? How far do you go with things that are dangerous? Clearly, the gantry over the road has a wind restriction, and they took that down because they didn't want bits blowing onto people, and we've seen that happen at races. The bridge wasn't used, as you say, and they managed to just put the loop in the opposite direction where they were going to go. So instead of it being a figure of eight, it was two loops. But for me, the mud and the bridge were the really dodgy bits, because the bridge, I had a look at the construction because I knew it had been taken out. And I looked at that and thought, in the UK, you wouldn't be running that. No way on this earth. For a start, you wouldn't be able to run the handrails because you can slide out of them. If you get that wrong, you're out the side of the bridge, 20 metres up in the air, it's game over. And massively different. And no side braces. So there's nothing. So if a wind blew sideways at that, you could see that laid on the floor very easy. So quite right, take that out. The mud, if we just take that one section, the Bog of Doom, was followed by a descent down where riders were struggling to run down it. And all those sections where you have people running downhill into compressions, ditches, catching people out on the bike, where the water is so full and it's full of liquid mud, that is really, really cutting it close. And I'm not surprised that they took out the Bog of Doom around the men's course when it was in for the women's, because they clearly saw potential for injury. And like you say, that ski boot fracture, I think we were saved by the fact that everything was liquid and it was just soft enough that it didn't stop it dead. But
you look at the bikes.
At what point don't you run?
The bikes were clean.
It's got to be close.
The bikes were clean. Oh, you could have won bikes that.
Yeah.
It was the chains were still shiny. there was nothing picking up because it was so wet.
For me, I think we say this, it's cross. Variety is king. We want different races. We want different riders coming to the fore. We want that excitement. And to do that, we have courses like Herentals, we have courses like Namur, we have flat courses, we have courses like Zolder, and we have the Dendermonde, the flat race. Had this been another time of year, had this not been in the middle of a storm, it would have been much faster. And maybe then we'd have been going, what a fantastic race, it was really close, and we've missed these really flat, close courses. But it wasn't. And I think it was very borderline. It's that dangerous versus spectator enjoyment and rider enjoyment. And I don't think there's anybody who got to the end of that race and went, oh, that was the best thing ever.
Yeah, I think if you look at, you mentioned the spectator enjoyment there. Well, first of all, I did notice that they were running the canned crowd noise again at that one as they came over the line. But I was wondering whether the lack of spectators meant that the riders had no warning of what was coming up. That we see it all the time, and I think it's I've got no problem with it, where you have the spectators and they'll shout to the riders, keep left, keep right. And even if you don't keep left or keep right, at least you know that there's something coming up, and especially if it's a section that you're not aware of. Or even if you see a big crowd of spectators all looking around with their phones ready to take that photograph, a bit like the infamous going over the bars of the at the Three Peaks. You know that there's something
you know
going
where
up.
It is. Yeah. I think for me the trade-off is worth it, because I'm loving the fact that we can hear the tyres, we can hear the change of gears, we can hear the squeal of the brakes, we can hear the riders breathing to know how hard they're going. You can get the drone or cable cam where you can actually see the whole of the course. You can see riders elsewhere on the course. You get a better view of whether they're coming back and going forward. So in terms of a TV spectator, it's improved by not having spectators on the ground, because you get more information, you can see more, you can understand it more. But it's not sustainable, and that is shown by the fact that Dendermonde moved the course. They had to move the course across from the existing one to one, which was free. So it was a free venue, and that's why they had to shift it. And it's all to do with gate ticket.
So, Matt,
it's not going to be sustainable.
Just put us into the picture a bit more on that, because that's something I wasn't quite so aware of, because it's a new venue.
So Dendermonde.
So if we see Dendermonde come up on the calendar again next year, it could actually be a different course.
And we've
altogether.
Got gated tickets. Yeah. It may well be that they are back on the original Ambience Cross course, whereas this was in a new venue, which was, as I understand it, free for them to use to put the race on.
Right.
And that then made it sustainable. because they could then move forward and keep the same organising team. They could actually put the race on, that they can look forward to next year, having put on a successful promotion, keep the partners involved. And that's something they did because they changed the venue. A gate ticket, if it's €20 a time and we have 20,000 spectators paying to get in the gate, that covers a lot of costs and that'll cover a big, expensive venue. And I haven't seen behind the scenes what Zolder costs. I don't think I actually want to know, because I can't imagine it's going to be very cheap, to put it mildly. But I'll bet you that they had a reduced fee this year, knowing that keeping it there is rolling.
And then just before we move on, then a little bit of a stato for you, Matt, a little quiz, right? Okay, you could probably guess which country had the most riders in the, I'm talking the women's race here, in the top 20. Easily.
Yeah, that would be Belgium.
No, Netherlands.
No, sorry, women. Yeah. Netherlands,
yeah. Who was the second, do you reckon?
In the top 20?
Which country had the most riders in the top 20?
So, Netherlands then... Achoo.
Let me start. Let me give you a few tips. In 20th was Caitlin Keogh. In 17th, Rebecca Ferringer. 15th, Madigan Munro, 18-year-old. And, of course, we know Clara Hunsinger was second. What a great day out for the US team. Katie Compton was 25th, and we saw what happened to her. So, you know, she could have been higher than that. But what a squad coming through.
Definitely. And do you know what? If any of the stateside's guys on the cyclocross radio or any on the cyclocross has ever go on about the fact that stateside riders can't ride mud, we're going to remind them of Dendermonde, because our colleagues over in the States doing a very similar job to us. They always say, we can't ride mud, we don't have mud. Yeah, right. Just think back to Dendermonde. That was a great result. Yeah, great stats. Neil, you do need to get out on the bike more.
I do. Yep.
Maybe you need to keep up with Finn a bit more. Yeah. And do some of Finn's voluminous training.
Absolutely. And for the British riders, Anna Kay, not her best day. Finn coming in 30th, and Sophie Wright coming in 46th. A small squad, we mentioned it on the last show, a small squad. It was really difficult for people to get their COVID test, PCR test, not possible because of Christmas, and so it meant a lot of people were, it was so difficult to travel, especially with our ports being closed for a few days. Understandable from a disease, from a pandemic point of view, gutting for those riders who have been selected. So, you know,
if you stayed out, you were all right. If you came back, you weren't. And I think it's that simple. There were a lot more people planning on riding and didn't, and it is part of this year. And hopefully it won't be part of next year when we move on to what will hopefully be a more normal season.
Let's hope so. At this point, let's look forward with a bit more optimism as we enter the last ronde. So in the last ronde, we always look ahead at what's coming up in the cyclocross season. And over the next few days, we have got a really packed schedule. We've got Breden or Bredena, I'm never sure how to pronounce that, Baal, Gilligam, and then Holst, or is it? So we've got four coming up over the next few days. And what we've done is we've invited a special guest into the pits today, Finn Mansfield. Finn, welcome to the Crosscast.
Thank you for having me.
Finn, just tell us a little bit, what were you doing last season?
So last season I took a gap year, so took a break from studies and trained as full-time. Was in Belgium for about 3 months, racing all of the sort of big-name events. And so I've got a small bit of experience about some of the races which are coming up.
Great. So you've ridden Zolder last year, but we've already talked about that one. But coming up, just give us your insight then. So the first one, now you say, I think you always call it Bredene, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been sure about how to pronounce the name. But either way, we know it's a pretty brutal course. There are lots of ups and downs, and half of it's got really good drainage and half of it's really slippery. I always found I quite struggled on that day. It was at the end of a big block for me, so I was pretty cracked by that point. But yeah, there are loads of ruts, and the start goes from a tarmac start straight into possibly the slipperiest bank I've ever ridden. And so you'll see, if you watch last year's race, you'll see maybe like 50% of the riders get up it, and then as there's that nice concertina effect, about everybody at the back just has to sort of get off and try to get up the very slippy bank.
But this is just a straight line, isn't it? Straight off the start.
Yeah, so it's a straight line off the start, but just because of the amount of riders which are there and the ruts which go into it, and there's like a small footpath which goes across the course, and so you're sort of hitting your rim on that footpath, then like, oh, what just happened? And then you're on this bank and it's all just a nightmare, but you know, it's all good fun.
So when you were racing that, Finn, I guess you weren't on the front row of the grid, were you? You were whereabouts in the field, were you, when you set
off? As much as I wish I was at the front, you know, I was very much on the back row, looking very far towards Mr. Van der Poel and Mr. Van Aert.
So they set off down the grid, heading to the bank, and you can see them, I presume, heading almost up towards the top before you actually hit the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
just volume of riders in between.
Yeah, there were a good sort of 30, 40, 50 riders by that point, and so it'll be maybe 5 or 6 seconds before I even hit the bank, and they've already gone off.
And does that make it more nervy when you can see them in front? Because you won't see them on the flat very much, but the moment it goes uphill, you can suddenly see that field in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. And you see just, okay, so these are all of the riders which I need to get past, and it's sort of like you can see all of your goals as you go through.
But then coming back through the field, you've got people that you're racing week in, week out. So you get the head-to-head races, just like any league, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just the level is at, you know, it's the best in the world. And so, like, as it was the Christmas period, at that time there were loads of Brits out. So I think in the race there were people like Toby Barnes, Jensen Young, who I saw up ahead of me. Then all of the sort of normal British professionals like Cameron Mason, Tom Lane.
Yep. So back to Bredener, we've got these slippery banks. Watching it on the TV, it always looks really narrow, actually, as a course.
Yeah, so it seems like, because it's in what people like to call just how half the Belgian courses are in industrial wasteland, they try to fit a lot of course into a very small area. And so actually a lot of it is only 3 metres wide. And that really means that sometimes it can be a lot of single file. And it means that actually all of the ruts, because it's so narrow, there's only really one line to ride through and all of the ruts are really deep. Yeah. And then actually there's a sand section as well. So when I was riding it, it was a long hairpin. So you drop down a bank, so you've got a nice amount of speed going into the sand.
And if I've got my memory right on this, is this the one where actually that the hairpin around there, it is rideable? It's not one where as soon as you hit a corner, it's so soft that you slide out. Is this one where you can actually make it all the way around?
If you've got good sand skills, yeah.
I think that might have been a slight omission there for more practice required. Or
absolutely.
So we've got Bredener on the 30th, and then on the 1st we have Bale. Sven Nys's back garden. This is where Sven lives. This is what he owns. This is his place. Particularly last year, we saw there's that set of run-up. There's a run-up steps that Tivo Nys have been practicing all summer to kind of lane the bike over and to ride up the side of it. But what do you think about Bale? You raced it last year?
Yeah, brutal. Absolutely brutal, because it's always on the 1st of January, it's really cold, sort of deep winter, and got to say with those steps, only Tivo Nys rides those.
But the rest of the course is really big, isn't it? It might be his back garden, but he's a bit like having a mini Alps in the back garden, isn't it? The banks are big and they're steep as well, aren't they? So it's really quite a scary course. All the riders you talk to always say it's one of those that you look at it and you think about it instead of just throwing yourselves over. Was that the same for you, Finn?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's the classic sort of whoop section where there are all of those big rollers. And there's actually a lot of elevation gain in the course as well.
Yeah, I always think that when I saw that whoop section that you mentioned there last year, I was surprised with just what the gradient is on that. It looks fairly flat on the TV coverage, but actually that's going down the side of a hill. You know, you kind of let yourself go at the top. What you can't see on the coverage is how the mud goes into ruts in between each of those.
Yeah, so you basically get air from one and then jump almost into a rut and then get air onto the next one. But yes,
excellent.
So absolutely, it goes down the hill the same way that it goes, takes a left as I rode it, takes a left and then goes back up. And then it's all the same hill, the one which then you go up and down that a couple of times and there's a tarmac straight and it's all on the same sort of gradient. So it looks flat, but really it's probably a good 3 to 6% ish.
And that really takes its toll, doesn't it? I mean, TV always foreshortens things. It always makes the gradients look less. And we've talked at length about just how steep things are when you get there. But I think, for me, that's the biggest difference. And when you go out there, you then think, hang on a minute, our courses aren't all that bad. You know, what we think of as a bank is just like a start straight over there. So it is definitely different. But do you think it pays off, the fact that Sven's got this in his back garden, he can finesse the course and he can make it dial for cross? Is it the best course? Is it the best mix?
Well, in a sense that it's purpose-built, it's brilliant, because you know that every single year it's going to be exactly the same. But I wouldn't say that it's my favourite course. It might have just been the conditions on the day. But in a sense, because it's always got riders on it all year round, the whole thing is likely to turn very deep mud, very sort of cloggy and almost a quagmire-y, rather than a course which is like just, it was a field one like 3 weeks ago and now it's only been ridden for this weekend, where actually sort of it doesn't get worn down as much.
So pit crews are going to be really important there, and how fast they can turn the bikes around, which we know this season is more difficult than it has been previously. So maybe that's going to be part of the effect. And that's different, again, isn't it, really, to across to Gooligham?
Yeah, so Gooligham is a classic. It's a classic Belgian cross course. It starts on a main, well, it starts on a sort of road around houses. And then there's a right-hander which would take you in between two houses and then into some fields almost in people's back gardens.
That right-hander, when we talked about this the other day, you were saying that is super, super sketchy, was your words.
Yeah, there's almost always a crash. Certainly, I think we were watching one of the women's races the other day and there was a crash on that corner, and I think there was at least very close to being a crash on the men's race, which I rode. This course itself, one of the main features I'd say would be there's like a sort of a mud mound which is almost like a sort of a point, and it's just absolutely crazy. It's one of those where you've got a big rut in the middle of it and you either ride the rut and you hope to fall to the left if you mess it up, otherwise you fall right 2 metres all the way down.
Nice.
Yeah, it's got some really weird features, isn't it? So you've got the steepness of the banks, they're kind of, well, they're more than a heebie-jeebie if you were coming down them. You know, but they're only just runnable, it seems. But then you've got this those weird step things as well.
They were weird. So they're like man-made steps where you have about 3 or 4 normal steps and then a 1 metre flat section and then a 1 metre steep ramp down.
It's like a flyover if you were making a flyover for cats. So it's like, yeah. You could just about get a cat underneath it. It's 3 steps up and then a little roll down. Really strange.
Phrase of the episode, it's like a mini flyover for cats. Yeah, okay. We've all got it in our head. Don't say any more, Neil. Don't say anything. We all understand that. I wait to see that. when it comes back on again.
But this one, and, I think see what's going to be interesting with this is that this is... So we have Bredin on the 30th, then you get a day off, then Baal on New Year's Day, Gulligan on the 2nd, then on the 3rd, so this will be your fourth race in 5 days if you're doing all of them, we're to Holst. First time as a World Cup, or at least it should have been. So Finn, you raced Holst last year. It looks like an amazing course. Just describe it to us.
Holst is amazing. Holst is one of the best courses I've ever ridden. You have the defining feature is that you've got a windmill at the top. You ride through the windmill and then you go down a bank which is about as big as a house. Like, I am not kidding.
Excellent.
It's got braking bumps on the way down, which are just sort of normal on a bank where it's like a mountain bike descent. And then it goes down towards all of the... It's got like a sort of... I think it's a moat going around what used to be the castle. And you ride around that, and then you run all the way back up this massive...
But you've got to remember, these banks, what were they designed for in the first place? You know, this is a castle in a place which has a very long history, if you kind of go to when we were busy with the English Civil War, of people deciding it's a, which country is this in. So they built the castles, and they built them in places that were... They were explicitly designed to have banks on them so people couldn't run up them. That was the whole point.
Exactly.
Of those banks.
And then we decided to just make them run up them.
We make them ride round them, run round them, go round the banking, try not to fall in the moat. Sorry, Finn. head off around the corners. So you couldn't get through the episode without at least one reference to swimming. Then
I mean,
if you come
not
up,
to.
And then if you come up and through, like you say, you've got this castle. If you didn't know it was part of European history, you'd think it was like a wonderland, a, you know, Disney park almost, because you've got this almost picture perfect windmill and you've got this castle and the arches and the cobbles and everything. I think it's a great course, but the downside is
we're not actually
according
there.
To Neil, we're not going there. What's that all about?
So if you go onto the Holst World Cup website, it still has a picture of the windmill, so you can still see the windmill. However, it isn't actually in Holst. It's a place called Perkpolder, which is a real shame, so we're going to miss it this year. If you remember the Scheldercross a few weeks ago, which was that one that we talked about how horrible it was, and it was one of these wasteland phrase ones, the one where Alvarado had a wire in her wheel. Well, go a few kilometres up the coast and we're at this place called Perkpolder. It's got dikes and banks throughout. So in some way, they might be able to get a bit of the character of these huge run-ups that we have at Holst, but it is not going to be Holst. Well, you might see a windmill there. You might even see the Holst windmill, but it's not actually the same place at all. But it'd be easy to get to. And easy to keep people away from as well, which of course is what is so important this year with our pandemic going on. I don't know what to expect. The course, it's got all the features there that you would want, but bearing in mind what the weather's like at the moment, it's on the estuary. It could be pretty bleak.
Yeah, I mean, Perkpolder. I mean, it's an old place because it was damned to create the polder in 1210. Realistically, on the ground, it's sandy, it's going to be muddy, it's sub the level of the sea. We know what we're going to get. Come on, we're going to get steep banks, we're going to get a classic Dutch-Belgian cross course that's going to be tough. Will it be a classic like Holst? I don't think it is. I just don't think you can do that without having history. There's only a few courses that have been built instantly on their first running of being classics. Milton Keynes, and that is a tribute to Simon Burney's experience in cross. He's a classic, instant classic. You know, first time off, everybody loved it. But that's a rarity, that's the exception, not the rule. And for me, I think it's going to be for the riders to make the running. Finn, you've ridden these courses all together. In this packed schedule, who's going to be the type of rider across the three who's going to excel there? Is it going to be one type of rider? Are we going to see maybe one rider looking at hitting all those three, or are they three different riders are going to be up at the front?
Well, what's great about this season is actually, certainly, well, in the, both the men's and the women's, it's become a lot more open. So, as Van der Poel and Van Aert are doing more things in the summer, it means that they're not focusing on cross so much. And actually, that means that you have riders like Izabeet, Van Turnhout, Svik, who are all up there at the front. And actually, when it's such a packed schedule like this, they can target an event like Bredin or Gulligan or Holst and properly go for it. And that is actually, that could be one of the reasons why a lot of the riders pulled out of the World Cup last weekend. Is that actually, because the schedule is so packed, you're thinking sort of bigger picture that I've got another 8, 9, 10 races to ride in the next 2 weeks. And you just think, if I can get a lot of better results rather than getting a bad result at this one event, it's actually better to sort of target this event. And so actually, I think it could be very open. So
I think we might well see people not riding all of them. You know, 4 in 5 days is a big ask. But on the other hand, we've got to remember these are professional riders. I'm talking about the field as a whole. Or, well, not as a whole, but let's say the top half of the field, professional riders. This is their job. They're cross riders. And they're contracted to ride their bikes. And probably it's less important for the detail of where they're finishing if you're not the lead rider. You know, what the sponsors want, they want the people coming over the line with the arms in the air, of course. But also they need the coverage and the riders throughout the whole field. So it may well be that we will see riders who just see this as being a tough few days at the office as they have to ride every one of these. I think it's going to be interesting to see who goes for them, who may feel that at Gulligan they want to hold back to save themselves the next day, or those who do the opposite.
I think it's a really good point. I think if you look at the race at Zolder, we had the puncture and we had that first corner issue for Pidcock. And I don't know about you, I was sat there going, right, are they going to save themselves? They've got a World Cup coming up. So you just sit back, just let the others burn themselves out, have a hard race. But then you see both, Wout van Aert, you see Pidcock racing and getting themselves actually, in the end, a great result. And that is, like you say, because they're pros. But I think even if you're a professional, there are different riders can deal with day after day after day after day, and other riders who need that break in between. And, you know, Izabeet is a very weird combination because he doesn't work when he gets cold. He's now got himself in an incident and a crash. He seems to be one of those up and down riders, much more so than you got somebody like Meen, who is consistently in there, or Lars van der Haar or similar, who are there generally all the way through. Tunes always there. He always finishes. He rides race after race after race. And okay, sometimes the conditions suit him. And, you know, the top three when we were at Dendermonde, when we finished the women's race, I sort of said, well, this is what we're going to get in the men's. This is my prediction. That's what we got, because it suits him. But he's a rider who just seems to be really, really tough and built to just keep racing. And you don't see him taking as many breaks. And I think that's probably going to be the case here, where those riders who have got a stake in the standings and a chance to win it are going to target those races. And maybe before, we'd have seen with national champs and with world championships being major, majorly important, they were the ones that everybody raced. But now, I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, you only need to look at who pulled out of Dendermonde. And I think we've now got more equality across the series, and it's brought the other series back up again at a time when we were seeing them disappearing down in the status and the World Cup's coming up in status. So that change and that shift is partly due to the conditions in the world in terms of transport, logistics, COVID, etc. But I think it's also about the professionals in the sport riding everything, because at the moment they need that exposure.
Got a risk that these four races could be quite samey in the sense of conditions. They seem to be fairly similar in character. Okay, Baal has probably got more elevation changes, but they're all quite technical. If the weather is as bad as it was at Dendermonde, And if there's all that water left in the ground, I think we could end up with four sloggy races here. It's quite possible that that could happen. And it is going to be interesting to see who improves through them, who gets fatigued through them, and who can cope with those conditions. I mean, we've got riders, someone I'm really looking, well, the two riders actually in the women's field that are going to be fascinated to see how they go. One of them fairly obvious in Hunsinger, who can, you know, she seems to be able to do no wrong over the last few weeks. Can she continue to improve? She seems to be going incredibly well at the moment. And if the conditions stay the same, I'm sure she'd say, yes, please, give me that. And the other person I'm interested to see is Puck Peters, because we've mentioned her before, how she can seem to do well on anything you throw at her. Now, considering how old she is, how experienced she is, and you know, her development stage, she's been absolutely fantastic early season. You know, every type of condition, she's been doing well. And so I'll be interested to see how many of these she rides, whether she just chooses to be strategic in resting for some of them. Because I think it would be a big ask to have a less experienced rider to do four races in 5 days.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Younger riders don't work as well over multiple days. Generally, you just don't have that same endurance. However, is it now going to be the case that we are going to see riders... I'm trying to think for the right word here. Riders go above and beyond because we don't know what will happen in January. We don't know how many of those national championships are going to happen. We don't know that the world championships are definitely going to happen, or that the riders will manage to stay clear of COVID and be able to go. And I think that's reinforced by what's happened in terms of borders, in terms of, you know, the Kent strain, the South American strain, all these different variations are going to make a difference, and maybe that's where we are going to see a difference, where riders actually, it is this bit of the season might be the last bit of the season for all they know, so they're going to give it everything and they might go over the edge.
The other thing to note with this is after Holst, which is on the 3rd, we've then got a big break, actually, for a lot of nationalities. We do have the national championships that were supposed to be on the following weekend of 9th, 10th, and very few of those are actually happening. Some of them have already happened, some of them have been delayed, a lot of them have been cancelled. So a lot of people, what are they waiting for? No, they don't need to rest themselves. They can absolutely give it everything. Maybe some of them aren't even selected for Holst. So we could see some really good racing actually further back in the field over these 3 days. And then it's quite a long time until we get to the next World Cup at Overijssel on that weekend, 23rd, 24th. But I don't want to preview that too early, because we've got to have another show before then, when we can talk about this block and look forward to what's going on in some of the other races that will be coming up, particularly for the national champs. I can see the finish line ahead. I think it's time that we wrap up. You've got a lot of cross to watch over that 5 day period, so I hope that you will all do your homework ready for the next show. You can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil. Matt, where can we find you?
You can find me at Matt Fixer Payne on Facebook, on Twitter, and of course you can always tune into the Danny Cycling YouTube channel and watch the rating on the Donny Chain Gang.
And it's a women's ride tonight, isn't it? But...
oh, yeah. We ought to mention that. We've got, at the moment, 140 plus and counting in the very first Donny Chain Gang women's ride. So I'm really looking forward to bringing the action on the YouTube channel for that, so make sure you tune in when the show's out and get that watch back. We've got riders including, of course, the Zwift Virtual Tour de France stage winner April Tacey taking part, as well as plenty of other riders, most of the UK pro scene, plus lots of our regular Chain Gang riders too.
Excellent. And Finn, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, at Finn Mansfield.
Excellent. And until next year, we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.